Welcome to the Satiated Podcast, where we explore physical and emotional hunger, satiation, and healing your relationship with your food and body. I'm your host, Stephanie Mara Fox, your somatic nutritional counselor. I'm looking forward to my conversation today with Suzanne Kohlberg. Suzanne is a NOPE coach, speaker, and author who helps overgivers and people pleasers learn to say no to others in a way that feels good so that they can say yes to themselves. Through her signature online program, Why Wait, Suzanne has helped hundreds of women break the cycle of putting themselves last and instead build the confidence to set boundaries. Suzanne is a certified NLP practitioner and has certificates 3 and 4 in fitness and is a certified sacred deaths practitioner. Welcome, Suzanne.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephanie.
I'm so excited to connect with you today. And I would first just love to start with hearing a little bit more of your story and how you got into this very important work.
Where to start? I love it when people say, tell me a bit. I'm like... So my story actually starts back when I was 4 and my parents, well, in particular my mother, put me on my first diet to fit into the flower girl dress for my sister's wedding. I honestly believe she was doing the best she could at the time, and that's what she thought was the right thing. So basically we got fitted for dresses, and all my life I had seen my mum and sister suck their bellies in. So when the dressmaker came along, I was like, that's what I do. And nobody was paying any attention to me because they were all flitting around hair and magazines and whatever. So when the dress came back, it didn't fit, like, by far. Mm-hmm. And I know that if it was my daughter, I'd be like, okay, let's get that taken out. But instead, my mum was like, let's go on a diet. Mm-hmm. And that started many decades long yo-yo dieting, which was physically difficult, emotionally crushing. And basically I was on and off in a diet until I was 30. And then I was like, I can't do this to myself anymore. I just had my second child. I was 150 kilos, so 330 pounds, like physically unhealthy, but mentally and emotionally drained. And I was like, what I love with your podcast, like, you know, healing the relationship with food. Cause like, I know what to eat. I know how to exercise. Like, I believe we all know what to do in some level, but we just don't do it. So I went on this journey looking into, why do I eat to fill the void? Why do I eat when I'm not hungry? If physical hunger isn't the problem, food isn't going to be the solution. Like, you can't have enough of what you don't need or really actually want. And that started my journey with boundaries and basically saying no to others so that I could say yes to myself and not depleting myself all day and then filling up all night. Because I believe so many of us are overgivers and then we overconsume in some way to make up for the fact that we've given and given and given and given. And it was like, why am I chronically saying yes to everybody else and not even checking in with whether I want to or not? And why am I so scared to say no, like putting the people pleasing and putting myself aside and my needs aside for others? So that became the next part of the iteration of my journey. I actually did release weight. I don't say lose weight because I don't want to, anything I've lost in my life, I want to find again. Keys, my wallet, my phone. But it wasn't the focus. It really was the byproduct of becoming more me and healing that relationship with food and actually seeing food as a nourishment and exercise, not punishment for, you know, being not enough in some way.
I really appreciate the what you are bringing in here is this connection between overconsumption and overgiving. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about that, because oftentimes when individuals I know come to me, there's this hyper focus on the food. I have to get this food thing figured out. And then as more awareness starts to come in of, oh, actually, my food behaviors are happening for a reason because these other areas of my life are not being attended to.
Yes. Yes. So I believe that overeating, overconsuming is a double pain. And there's the first pain, which is what causes us to overeat and overconsume in the first place, which gets very little airtime traditionally. And then the secondary is the result of that. So as a result of overeating, there's often excess weight, or the result of often overspending is, you know, not much in the bank, or, you know, there's the result. And so much of our society focuses on that secondary thing. It's like, okay, how do we lose weight? How do we budget? How do we constrict or restrain? And it all made sense for me last year. It's a really random example, but I speak a lot of metaphors. So in our house, the ceiling was leaking, like over the stairwell. So it wasn't terrible because none of our stuff was being destroyed, but still, like, it's not good. So we are renting the house that we're in currently. So I called the landlord and I was like, the ceiling is leaking. I'm like, not to worry, we'll send somebody over. I'm like, great. So they sent somebody over, they fixed it up. I was like, sweet. And they recarpeted, they painted the walls, like, you're good to go. Then the next time it rained, the ceiling was leaking again. And I was like, oh no, I have to be that tenant. So I called them again and they're like, oh, that's not good. We'll send the people back. Same deal. They fixed it. They're like, it's all good. Painted, recarpeted, off they go. The next time it rained, here it goes again. And I remember ringing my dad and he's like, did they get somebody up on the roof? I'm like, well, no. He's like, well, how did they fix the ceiling? And I'm like, they went through the manhole. And he's like, but nobody actually looked for a loose tile. I was like, well, no. And I don't know anything about roofs. Like, this is why. And the reason this makes sense for me in terms of weight and overconsuming is when we are looking at the number on the scale or the size of our clothes and, you know, how we eat and exercise, that's the changing the carpet and painting the walls analogy. But then when the rain comes again, so we can do it for a while, because I think the biggest frustration with myself, with my yo-yo dieting history, and I've lost and regained in excess of 500 kilograms. That's like 1,000. That's like a ton, like half a ton in my life. And it was like, because I never got up and looked at the roof and had a look at the tiles and the ceiling. So when the rains came, like the thoughts and the emotions that led to the eating, it just came back. And for so many of us, we are conditioned to just say yes, be the good girl. Like, I'm not saying be a bitch, but sometimes it's like, could you do this? And you don't even check in. And it's like, well, actually, no, or not right now. Like, I would be the kind of person in the past, if someone's like, Suzanne, can you help me move house at 6 a.m. tomorrow? I'd be like, I'm there. And now I'd be like, well, maybe at 12 o'clock on Saturday. And they'd be like, oh no, it needs to be 6 a.m. tomorrow because like my lease is up or whatever. But their inability to have their organization is not my problem. And there's a really long journey to get to there, because we feel really bad for people and we want to be loving and caring and kind, but then we're often over giving and then we're overdrawn. So that's why I believe we stay up late and watch Netflix and eat chips, because that's the way that we receive. Eating is a form of receiving.
Yeah, it's such a fine line to navigate of really tuning in and starting to assess, what do I actually want to be saying yes and no to? And it's such a fine line, because we're often taught to put everybody first, to put everybody above ourselves. And that when healing your relationship with food, it's actually, I need to put my air mask on first, like they say on a plane, because I can't actually be there for anybody else if I don't put myself first. And then, like you were just referencing, food can come in a little bit less because our own needs are being met first. Like, I totally hear you, that nighttime routine. I've talked with that about that nighttime routine with so many individuals I've worked with, that it's they go, 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 putting everybody else first all day long. And then the evening is the one and only time that they are putting themselves first. And so all the things come in, the food, the TV, the maybe certain drinks. And it's really pleasurable, maybe in the moment, to finally relax and put yourself first. And that can kind of shift and change of what would happen if you did that all day long in so many different areas of just slowing down and pausing and getting curious of, do I actually want to be saying yes to this right now? Because if I say yes to this now, that might mean that I'm saying no to myself.
Yeah,
I think that's a powerful thing to start getting curious about, of if you say yes, what are you saying no to? If you say no to something, what are you saying yes to?
And a little exercise I would always get my clients to do. I'm seeing I've got a proper one here. But if you've got a piece of paper there, Stephanie, or anyone listening, you just need a little square of paper. And on one side, write yes. And then turn it over. And on the other side, write no. And whenever anyone asks you for anything, you literally, if you hold up the yes facing them, what is facing towards you? So, and it's even like my children are quite young. They're 7 and 9. And I have my office is where we're recording this. They've just gone to school, but sometimes they are home when I'm working. And outside my office door is literally a little sign that says yes or no. And if it's on no, then they can't interrupt me unless it's an emergency. And then we even had to have a discussion about what an emergency is. Because I remember the first time I set this all up and I was like, yes, I'm going to be able to do some work uninterrupted. And then in comes one of them. I'm like, it's an emergency. And I'm like, yes, guess what? I can fit 27 blueberries in my mouth. And I'm like, we have a very different definition of what an emergency is. But like when we say yes to others, like when we've planned to go for a walk or do a yoga session or, you know, even do a meditation or some journaling. Like I know a lot of my clients, I journal with them, and my own journaling journey is also quite tumultuous. But, you know, mum, can you just, and when I say yes and go and do that, it's me saying no to myself. And there are times when, you know, quality time with my family, like we're planning to do this thing, yes. But then there's quantity time when I'm sitting there kind of resentful because I wanted to be doing this other thing. So having those discussions that they can start quite young and knowing that, you know, that's building the relationship. Like it's funny, when I first started going to the gym and I put my kids in the crèche and I saw their little sad faces, oh, the guilt was so bad. I almost pulled them out and went home. But it wasn't long before I actually enjoyed it. And then it was funny, through the pandemic with the lockdowns and everything, they'd be like, oh, mummy needs to go to the gym. Because they know that, like, when I do that and feel better in myself, I'm much more present and with them, as opposed to the crankiness you get where you are saying yes when really you don't want to.
Mm-hmm. So in your experience of teaching those that you work with around this identification of, okay, is this a yes? Is this a no? What have you found around working with others of why it feels so difficult to say yes to ourselves?
I think so many of us feel selfish and, you know, we've been conditioned that, you know, putting yourself first is selfish. And I love the example you gave earlier about the oxygen masks on the plane, because the airplane totally has it going on. Like if you pass out, then you're no good to anyone. Mm-hmm. And then we think, oh, well, I will just this once, or, you know, it won't hurt. Or, you know, we've been conditioned that others first, yourself last. And then we don't realize that we're actually modeling to others. Like, I remember there was a quote, I can't remember it exactly, but it was like, you teach others how to treat you or something like that. And I was like, wow, that is so true. Because I remember growing up, I'm the youngest of four. And like, I love my family dearly, but I didn't actually really want to be a mum. Like, for a long time, my husband and I were together for 10, 11 years before we had children. And the reason was because I thought once you became a mum, your life was kind of over. Like as in, that's all you were. Because what I was modeled growing up was mum, she did everything for everyone all the time. She had no friends, no hobbies. Like, I loved her dearly, but I was like, once you become a mum, your life kind of sucks. And then it wasn't until like I really realized that I can choose the kind of mum that I want to be. And when I put myself first and I say to the children, like, you know, mum, like I do meditation daily, I call it my relaxing time. They're welcome to come and join me, or they can play the iPad or play outside or whatever, but that is my time. And they really do honor and respect that. And sometimes they ask for their own things or their own time. And I really appreciate that, because when you have really good boundaries and you're surrounded by people with boundaries, it's not offensive or rude to say, actually, I just need 5 minutes. Oh, okay, cool. Rather than pushing and forcing. And, you know, you can sense when somebody wants to be there versus they're feeling obligated. And I think, you know, in the beginning, it's really challenging, because if you've always been the yes person, it's scary to say no or not now, or actually you might not even know what your needs are. That's another thing. So many of us don't even know what our needs are because we push it down. Like, as you said, you push it down all day, and in the evening it's like, oh, finally. And everything comes out, the chips, the TV, the staying up too late, And in the back of your mind, the guilt, as you say, I'll start again tomorrow or Monday, the universal day to change your life. But what happens if you did say yes to yourself during a day in small ways? Like, what do I need right now? I need to sit in the sun for 5 minutes and catch my breath. Oh, how magical would that be, as opposed to, oh no, I'll just do it later and push and push and push all day.
Yeah, I even love that example of how small it can be. Because I often find that when needs haven't been addressed for so long, they can feel so big. And so it's kind of breaking it down into this very bite-sized piece of, what do I just need right now? Yeah, sitting yes. outside and just soaking in the sun. That sounds really relaxing, just right in this moment. And it's slowly starting to build up those check-ins and starting to feel like your emotional and physical needs are being met more and more throughout a day, so that it feels a little bit more manageable to attend to. Have you found that as well?
100%. Because as you said, when we don't know what our needs are and we're not used to addressing them, like a lot of the clients, when I first start working with them, like, what do you want? They're floored usually because they're not used to the question. But then they'll go to something like a week in the Maldives with a pool boy and someone cooking all my food. And, you know, and the thing is, why doesn't that work? Because that's aftercare. Like, how many of us go on vacation so drained and then we come back? And so many of my clients say, I don't have any issues with food when I'm on vacation, Suzanne. I can eat well, I can nourish my body, and then I come back and not even in the door and I'm already planning my binge, or I'm already like, you know, and it's like, it's the energy of the force that we have when we're home, where we deny our needs. Like if you're on vacation, you're like, I want to sit in the sun for 5 minutes. You do that. But when you're at home, you're like, oh no, I've got to write this email, I've got to send this blog, I've got to reply to this person. And email is one of my pet peeves because that's someone else's agenda, not mine. So one of the biggest signs of overgiving, I believe, is being constantly attuned to notifications, because we're so responsive to everyone else, but not our own. Like if your body's saying, actually, have a glass of water. Oh no, I've just got to do this. It's not even your own agenda. So I think it's the self-care. It cops a lot of bad rap, but self-care isn't just massages and sitting in the sun and reading a book. Self-care is making a doctor's appointment that you really don't want to. Self-care is eating the nourishing food when you're really craving something else. Self-care is going for the walk when you'd rather stay in bed. Like it's the challenging things. A lot of the other stuff is aftercare, where we've gotten too far to the point that we need these other things because we've actually broken down.
Yeah. And I think what you're really pointing out here is when we go into vacation mode, we're often in a relaxation response. And mm-hmm. that is the bodily state that we can make different choices in, because our prefrontal cortex is online. We can actually remember what our choices are in that moment. We're not in a fight or flight response, where as soon as you walk in the door, I would even start suggesting doing something different, because home is actually the hardest place to make a change in, because we automatically go into automatic pilot mode. And so it might even be putting your keys somewhere else. Or, you know, taking off your shoes in a different way, you know, just something super small in your home that feels different, that takes you out of a habituation of this is what I do in this environment.
I love that. And it's so funny because so many people dismiss the small things. Like, how could that ever possibly? Because I think another thing we're conditioned is go hard or go home. Like you need to do it big. And the thing is, that's the one-way ticket to dropping all the balls. And, you know, I think so many of us, the reason that we binge is because we tell ourselves we're never going to do it again. Like we lie to ourselves on some level. Whereas if you were like, actually, it's not waiting till Monday, it's just any other day, and really face that. And the power that you suggested of really small changes. And the other thing that you said that really resonated is when the fight and flight, you know, system is activated, what does eating do? Eating is a way that we tell ourselves that we're okay. Like if you were really activated, if we were in the wild being chased by a tiger or something, you wouldn't stop to eat something. You would literally be running. But the problem is we don't know our nervous system. We get a crappy email from our boss, or somebody says something nasty to us, or we start overthinking and that triggers it. why do we reach for food? Unconsciously, that's like our way of self-regulating that we're okay. We can do that with other things. As you said, something small. Another one I encourage people to do is scents, like smell. Like you literally wouldn't stop to smell the roses while you're running away. So having an essential oil or a fragrance or a spray or a perfume, try that instead of reaching for the biscuits, because it's another way that we're just calming our nervous system and saying, in this moment, I'm okay. Like I might have to deal with that boss later, or I've said no and the person's like really unhappy with me and there's a whole thing over there. But in this very moment, I'm okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious, how do you start to guide individuals on this path? Because it can feel really scary and daunting when you've been maybe a yes person your whole life and that food was coming in as a way to finally say yes to yourself. How do you start to teach individuals to say no more in their life so that they can say yes to themselves in different ways besides food? Food gets to be on the list. I always like to normalize food always gets to be on your list. And there are other ways you can say yes to yourself as well.
100%. So the very first thing that I do in my Why Wait program actually sounds counterintuitive, because people are used to joining a program and doing all the things. Like here's the list and here's the procedure and here's like, you know, and they're like really good students. The very first week, I actually don't give them anything, which freaks so many people out. But what I do is we create space, because so many of us overdoers and yes people have so many things on our agenda, myself included, that it's like, actually, when are we going to do this work on you? Oh, yeah, I'll just fit it in. Like, this is part of the thing. So the very first thing I do with people is kind of like I say, we do what I call a starting point assessment. And I'm like, so what else have you got going on besides this? And almost everybody says nothing, which I find fascinating. So I'm like, okay, so do you work? Yeah. How many hours of work do you work? Oh, I work 40 hours. Do you drive to work or you work from home? I drive to work. So how long are you in traffic? And we actually do an inventory of how much people have going on. And so whether you're in the program or not, this is something you could do. If you work, how many hours, travel? If you have children, how many hours do you spend prepping their lunch, helping them with homework, taking them to sports? Do you have any hobbies of your own that you actually do? Or do you have unlit passion projects kind of junking up every shelf? But like what do you have on the go currently? And how much of that could you delegate? Like, you know, there's some things I delegate actually dropping my kids off to school to my husband now, because he's worked from home since the pandemic. That's for us being the gift in it. And I was like, why can't he drop them to school? That saves me an hour a day, 5 hours a week saved right there. Anyway, there's so many things. Like my first thing would be look at everything that you have currently. What of it could you delegate and would you feel comfortable to? And what of it could you ditch? Because sometimes, you know, there's things that have been on our to-do list for so long that it's just, it's never going to get done. So like cut the cords of that program that you've bought that's gathering digital dust and guilting you every time you look at your desktop and go, oh, there's that thing. Ditch. Or if you really do want to do the thing, do it. Because sometimes like responding to that email or saying something to that person is taking up all this mental space and it literally takes you like 5 minutes to actually do. So create space for the change, for the, you know, take charge of the change, make space for you. And the other thing is to make some time to do the things that you want to do, like journaling or reading a book. Like I love when I work with clients and they're like, what's your passion thing? Oh, I've got all these books that I never read. So like read a page a day. Oh, I couldn't do that. Like, but making this time and then protecting it, the sacred time for you, is the very first step. And then notice when other people ask how you go saying no and stretching that no muscle, or, and this is the biggest thing for myself included, when I don't want to do my own work, like when I don't want to do my own journaling, I'll go find somebody to save. I'll be like, oh, do you need help with your homework? Oh, would you like this? Oh, maybe I'll just clean out the pantry. Notice your own resistance to doing the stuff, not just when other people are asking, but when you are looking for ways out of doing the thing that you said you'd do.
I love all of these. I think that is so very important to first do just an assessment of your life. You might even notice that there are some areas that are more imbalanced than others, But it all starts with awareness. You can't change what you're not aware of. And so I can just see your participants being like, wait, you're not giving me something. I can just like step into my, you know, linear, like go, go, go energy and just like go do that thing. It's like, well, that's what got you here already, is you're already doing too many things. You know, if we put a metaphor in here, like there's too much on your plate. And we actually have to make that meal of your life feel a little bit more manageable and also start putting things on your plate you really enjoy. It's like eating a meal just because you think you should eat it, but it actually doesn't satisfy you.
Yes, because you can control, you can control how much you consume, but you can't control how much you digest. And I think so many of us like over consuming, whether it be food or things or whatever, but then we're not fully digesting or appreciating the thing that we're doing. It's like, and it's funny, why weight isn't a prescription. Like it is a, it's a program that runs for rounds. And I loved how you spoke about linear, because I believe that linear is before and after, and why so many of us fall into this, well, I failed, because when we see life as linear, it's like, that's the end. Like the after is the end. And because I'm not there yet, whereas life is cyclical, like we have seasons. And so with the program, we start, like I artificially make it a spring because we're all starting together, but it's honoring the season that you're in, and you can be in season, different seasons in different parts of your, you know, your own life, personally, relationship, business, health. It's tracking back in and then realizing when we see a season model, no one, there's no before and after. We're just in a different season to someone else. So we might be in a winter and they're in a summer. So no one's ever ahead or behind. We're just where we are. And I think what's really powerful about that is every season has a, you guys would call it a fall, we would call it an autumn, a time to harvest. And there's no need to fear the winter, because in the linear model before and after, if you haven't got there yet, if you haven't reached your goal, that's it, fail, the end. Whereas in this round, I was hoping I would accomplish this. I haven't quite got there yet, but these are all the things that I have had. Because the other thing that comes up, you know, in true transformation, it doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's why I've always been irritated by shows like The Biggest Loser, because they go into a vacuum where they have no, they don't have to work, they don't have responsibilities of family and caring, and then they take them out of that and put them back in their real life and say, like, just do it all, pick all these things back up. And it's kind of like, so in the last round of Why Wait, we had some people who were really down on themselves at the end, like, I didn't achieve the things. I was like, okay, so I made this checklist. How many of you, you know, lost a job, moved house, got COVID, cared for somebody with COVID, had a health thing? And we had this, I think it was ended up being like 20 things on there. And the people who were really down on themselves, like, I haven't reached where I thought, often had, you know, 8 to 12 things on this list. And I was like, did you expect any of this to happen? Like, no, because that's the other thing too. My program's called Why Wait? Because what are we waiting for? So often we're like, when the kids are older, I'll look after me, or when I get that new job, or when I've moved house. But there's always going to be something else. So it's like looking at, yeah, I may not have achieved this particular milestone, but I have achieved all these other things. And sometimes the mental and emotional release of like letting go of a lot of stuff that we don't actually need to do is so much more powerful than a physical result.
It's such a beautiful reframe of taking yourself out of diet culture mentality of, I have to get at this point at this time. It's very that like kind of masculine energy of like, just like go, go, go. Let's just like make this happen. Where what I hear you kind of talking about is a little bit more of that gentle, and I say this in masculine energy and feminine energy, not in regards of like gender, but more in regards of the energy that we like come at things. And I hear you with the change of the seasons. Nature is a very feminine energy thing. And so it's kind of approaching it as, okay, can I flow with myself in these phases that I'm in throughout the year? And that just because maybe externally it's summer, you might be in a winter phase in your relationship with your food and your body. And just really getting curious, even if you started to label your phases as times of the year, and saying, this is just where I'm at right now. I hear just so much compassion and acceptance, and it's okay to be just right here, and something will shift and change when it's ready to.
Yes. And I think that's the thing, because Why Wait is a 10-week program. I take us through all of the seasons in that time, like artificially. People will often come back and then they would have set themselves a standard. Like last round, these are all the things I achieved. And it's very capitalistic that every round we improve. And I think that's a society thing that we need to let go, because what does improve even mean? And what is like, does, it's funny, bigger always mean better, or because I've gone this far, I need to go this far. And it's like, actually in nature, like sometimes we just have a standing pattern, or sometimes we deliberately will burn something down, like especially Indigenous tribes, in order, like prune in order to grow. And it's like, to have the space to be held in that, and to have a community where you can discuss that, and to sit with the sometimes disappointment, or like, this is how I thought this would go. But then in the hindsight, we can see actually, and now the thing is even better. Like if I look at my own life and journey and weight and moving around and all the things I've done, people are like, oh, like if you knew then what you knew now. And I was like, yeah, but this has been part of who I am. Like I'm always becoming. So I think when we look at, you know, seasonally, and, you know, sometimes there is like a bushfire, or sometimes there is a drought, and sometimes there's these unexpected things, it allows us to take a lot of the pressure off of always having to be improving. Every quarter's got to be better than the last one. And, you know, and that's, as you said, the very masculine energy of divorcing yourself of the emotions and more. And it's like, to what end? And then like, once you've achieved this goal, there's always going to be another one. So it's like celebrating every single step and not just the result, and really getting into the routine of celebrating. So somebody started this round, which I'm loving, like today I appreciate, and just a picture or a word, or like I had a medical appointment last week. I got ridiculously lost. I have no sense of direction. Anyway, it was funny. I could have got there on the bus at 9:20 or 9 o'clock. And I was like, well, I'll just go 9 o'clock in case I get lost. So I must have known. Ended up in this bushwalk. I was like, I really hope that I'm actually heading to where I'm not about to get kidnapped here. But anyway, it was beautiful. I saw a waterfall. I took some photos, and I was like, that half an hour was like, I was a little bit worried about getting there on time, but it was just so nice, rather than just sitting there in the doctor's office for half an hour, like going through all the overthinking of what possibly could be happening. So I think, you know, letting yourself be present in the moment rather than caught up into like, our life is a series of achievements and boxes that we have to tick.
Yeah. And I really appreciate you brought in that activity with your participants of actually assessing, well, what else was going on in your life while you were going through this? And I think that can be like, we have this same expectation for ourselves, regardless of what's going on in our life. And ooh, that kind of needs to change of, okay, this is just what's possible for my body, for my nervous system, for what else is going on in my life that I can navigate. And that is going to change from season to season, depending upon what's just capable. And when you feel more regulated or less regulated, that it's, oh, wow, let's look at all of these other things that were going on in your life. And that when you look at all you achieved with all the things that were going on in your life, that actually becomes a pretty big achievement.
Yeah, because what happens, I think, Stephanie, is so many of us just check out. When life gets hard, we're like, okay, we just check out of whatever it is we're doing entirely and go back to the, you know, safety and getting our minimum needs met, and then and put it off and go, okay, I'll do next round, or I'll do next time. And it's like, it's staying in the room. One of the things we have hashtag stay in the room, because it's like, yeah, I have all this stuff going on. I'm not going to add more to my plate by forcing, but I'm just going to be like, this is the trajectory or the side quest that I'm on at the moment, but I'm still here turning up in the smallest way for me. And these small things, as you said, putting your keys somewhere else, sitting outside for 5 minutes, they become the big things rather than us. I think this is where the go hard or go home mentality comes from, which is like leading to binging. It's like, everything's too hard right now, so I'm going to quit on myself and go and eat, as opposed to everything's really hard right now, and I'm just going to take the very smallest step that I can today. And that might be having a glass of water, sitting in the sun, saying no to someone rather than forcing myself to go flog myself at the gym or something.
Yeah. So I really love to break things down into baby steps for individuals. So the baby step, even before everything that we're talking about, is how does someone remember to put themselves first? And I'm curious what you have found or the guidance you have given to even have someone remember to make a different decision to put themselves first.
So the very first thing that I do with people is, you know, making time, as in looking, you know, as I said. And the next thing is I call them pennies because a penny compounded over time becomes a big amount. Mm-hmm. So what is the very smallest thing that you can do towards the habit you want to create? So say, for example, you've got an exercise goal. My penny for my exercise, and people laugh at it, I don't often share it publicly, is my shoes are on and I walk to my mailbox. And people are like, oh, she must have a long driveway. No, it's 12 steps to my mailbox. Because once I have my shoes on and I'm out the door, I usually keep going. But some days I just make the mailbox and that's it. Because so often we go, oh, okay. And people say, oh, I'm going to do 10 minutes or I'm going to do 20 minutes. That isn't a penny, people. It needs to be so small. It could be, I remember one client I worked with, she wanted to do these stretches from the physio. She never did them. I said, oh, I was just curious, like, why don't you do them? She's like, it's really hard to get to the floor. Like, she's in a lot of physical pain. So her penny is to get on the floor. And she celebrates every day. Like, I sat on the floor today. And we're like, yay. So find a person that you can celebrate your thing with that's not going to look at you sideways and give you that nascent eye roll. But make your thing so small. Like my journaling penny is I write the date. Like, that's it. I would ideally like to write a couple of pages. Like I do like morning pages from Julia Cameron. I very rarely write three. But like whatever it is that you're trying to change, make the thing so small that like if it's 10 o'clock at night and you're getting into bed and you're like, oh, I haven't done my journaling, you can get out of bed, write the date and get back in. Because how you like the idea isn't, well, I'm never going to change my life by doing this thing, but you're opening the window to compound by making it really, really small. So I'd pick no more than four habits, because a lot of times when I say pennies, people trying to do 16 things. No. So I have a movement one, a food one, a mindset one, and then a miscellaneous. So my current ones, my movement, as I said, I walk out the door to my mailbox in my shoes, because the idea is if I did it barefoot, then I wouldn't be able to compound it. I write the date in my journal, and my food one is currently a water one, just like a glass of water, like one glass of water. And then allow yourself to celebrate and bask in that rather than making the goal so big that some days you'll hit it and some days you won't. And then we get in the good, bad mentality. No. Tiny, penny, baby step. And allow yourself to feel good about that.
Yeah, it's so amazing how we wait for something big to happen to acknowledge ourselves. And it has to be like something that you said of like celebrate every baby step. I'm like, I say that to all my people too. I'm just like, you gotta celebrate every tiny little baby step that you take, because it's all actually quite a really big deal. That if you put on your shoes that day and you walk to the mailbox, even that, if you decided not to go any further, that is a big deal. It even took a ton of pennies before that. You had to get out of bed. You had to get dressed. Like, it actually took a lot to get to that point, to be upright with shoes on and at the mailbox. And so even those tiny little things, a lot had to happen to get to that point. And so I completely agree that you have to start with celebrating the little things, because they start to be big things over time.
Yes. And that's the other one I'm doing right now. It's meditation. Mm-hmm. So it's put my earbuds in and press play. That's literally it. And the thing is, some days I enjoy it so much, I'll do a second. And some days it's just like, oh, I just can't do it today. But that's the thing. It's the baseline. And it's, as you said, even just I've got to find my phone, I've got to get my earbuds, I've got to open the app. Like all these things that we think, oh, unless I'm going to do half an hour, it's no point. It's the starting and setting yourself up for the success and breaking the pattern of like, I just can't do this, and then scrolling and watching cat videos for hours.
Which can be fun sometimes too.
Yes. But I think it's all about intentionality. Like I love watching videos, or I even love food. But there's, if I could take it or leave it, like there's the intentionality versus when I'm zoning out from something that I would rather be doing instead.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with that. It's saying, okay, I'm going to intentionally scroll through TikTok because I want to laugh, because I think that laughter is going to help me right now, as compared to I'm going to zone out because what is happening in my body and in my life feels too much to navigate right now. That's actually a call to check in instead of checking out, which can feel really hard in those moments. And that could be a penny moment of just, okay, so it feels hard to check in right now. What's one small way I can do that? Well, I can like feel my fingertip. That's technically checking in. Like, it doesn't have to be checking in with the part of your body that feels the most sensation, that feels overwhelming. It could be checking in a part of you that actually feels very neutral, just so that you slowly start to come into contact with yourself.
I think that's so important, because so often I think so many of us feel like we live our lives from the neck up. We don't check in. Like often when I say to people, so how does that feel? And they just, what do you mean? How does it feel? Oh, I don't know how it feels, because we don't. We're conditioned from a young age to ignore our bodies. Like my son has just started his second full year of school. He's like, the chairs are so uncomfortable. Like, we just sit there all day uncomfortable. And I'm like, they do, because we teach people, it doesn't matter that you're uncomfortable, just sit there, be quiet. And, you know, and it's like, imagine if we actually, what I need right now isn't food or isn't this. It's like, I just need to do a couple of stretches because my body is actually uncomfortable, but we're not used to listening to that cue. So when we get the cue of, oh, what's in the fridge? That's one that we'll listen to because we're used to that.
Yeah. I'm really hearing in those moments, it's just kind of starting to slow down. And even what I like to teach the individuals I also work with is starting to even get to know the cue of, should I go eat food right now, as their red flag of, ooh, is something else needing my attention? Because when I check in, I actually don't feel physically hungry. And so even our habituated cues can even be really wise strategies of our body's way of talking to us. Of, oh, if I could even interpret this in a different way, that actually that's my body's way of getting my attention. We could be like, oh, thank you for giving me the urge to go reach for food. I understand that may not actually be what I need right now, but thank you for giving me that urge so that I know that I need to check in with myself.
That is such a good point, Stephanie. I think when we can befriend that urge instead of demonizing it and making it bad, like so many people are like, oh, I just want to conquer my cravings, or I just want to, I'm like, but when you see them as a signpost, like for me now, after all this time, one of my biggest frustrations was like, I still have the go-to, like I want chocolate, like stat. And now instead of going, oh, there's something fundamentally wrong with me, I'm broken, it's like, oh, what is this a sign of? Like, what do I really need? Getting curious rather than getting like my inner judge. Or one of my clients says her inner mean governess. And I just love that, because, you know, it's that thing. It's like where you wrap yourself across the metaphorical knuckles saying, no, no chocolate for you. And it's like, what is this about? Why is this happening? Rather than making it mean there's something wrong with us.
Yeah, we are totally on the same page with all of these things. And it comes to, like you even just named, bringing in a lot of curiosity. Can you start to see that your current habits and patterns are serving you in some way, and that it will take some time, depending upon all the things that we've talked about today, the season that you're in, the phase that you're in, what's going on with your nervous system? It's going to take some time to shift and change how you're showing up in relationship with your food and body, and to give yourself that time. There is no medal for getting there faster.
That. And I think that's the thing with a lot of, you know, the diet culture and a lot of the things, it's fast, do it fast. You've got this many weeks. And when you have that mentality, like I know everything I went about with that mentality, in the back of my mind, I was already dreaming about what I could have afterwards. Like as soon as this is over, I'm going to go and have Macca's or McDonald's. I said Macca's to someone the other day. I was like, what do you mean by that? It's McDonald's in Australia. But if you're already dreaming about what you can do afterwards, it's like, that's a sign. It's like, oh, this isn't going to be forever. And the way that you get there is the way that you will be there. So if you're forcing, constraining and restricting and depriving, then it's not going to be lasting. And, you know, forcing ourselves, it's not a way to live, like, you know, depriving and deprivation and forcing. And instead, as you said, like learning to slow down and check in and listen. And that's often squidgy and uncomfortable, but it's you literally break through, and it's like, oh, all these things in my body actually being on my side and trying to communicate to me where its needs aren't being met, not my body is something wrong with it because it feels this way. Being in communication with self, it's a process and a journey.
Yeah. What I also hear in that is creating a life for yourself that you don't feel like you need to run away from. If there's something that you are doing that you can't wait until it's over to do something else, get really curious about that. If that thing that you're doing is really working for you. And if there is something that you're like, I can't wait until XYZ thing, well, start exploring how XYZ thing could happen now.
Yes, because there's very few things in life that we really have to force ourselves through, like the dentist, maybe, like, you know, something like that. Like that's in one moment I'll be like, I'm really looking forward to this being over, but not so that I can go and reward myself with food, just so, like, sorry, dentists, I can't come at that. But so many other things, it's like, if you are doing this to get that, is it really worth it? And is that going to be lasting? Because, you know, like, even when it comes to movement, so many people, it's funny, I did pole dancing a few years back. And what I loved about it is that the hour goes like that, like, because it's fun and you're so present. And I remember I was never particularly good at it. I enjoyed it. But there was this lady, she's hanging upside down by one leg. And next door to the pole dancing studio was a CrossFit studio. So we could hear the noise and the banging and whatever. So as this lady's swinging around upside down by one leg, she's like, I really wish I could have the motivation, or what did she call it? Willpower. This is it. Willpower to be fit. It's just like, excuse me. But because she was enjoying it and having fun in that, didn't see it as a workout as opposed to a grueling thing that you have to force yourself to. So, like, movement, exercise can be enjoyable. It doesn't have to be like, I have to do this thing.
Yeah, I think that comes right back around to getting really curious about what you're saying yes and no to. And then when you find the things you enjoy, allow yourself to enjoy it. That not everything has to feel like work. You know, we're so taught that we have to work so hard at things, but I would even potentially create a list of things that come natural to you that maybe you've lost appreciating about yourself because it feels so natural to you. It's not even something that you acknowledge about yourself anymore. And just take your time to say, you know what? Actually, it's really easy for me to walk my dog, like whatever it might be. It's really easy for me to get in the kitchen and cook myself a meal. It's not that easy for everybody to do some of these really simple things. Maybe it feels like a lot of work to them. So even the things that come easy to you, like appreciating that about yourself, just because that's what makes you you.
Yeah, 100%. And I think so many of us lose touch with it because it is easy to us. And because it comes naturally, we don't see that as a skill that other people would love to cultivate. So making that appreciation list of the things that you're already doing well. And even like in times when things are challenging and things aren't going well, appreciating the really small things. Like I always appreciate that when I turn on the tap, water comes out. Because not everybody has that all around the world, like the easy access to clean drinking water. I appreciate that I can go for a walk in my suburb. It's safe relatively, you know, and I have, you know, the things that we already have, because when we're setting goals and when we're things that we want to create, we can be so focused on what's over there and how life will be different when we get over there. But when we get over there, we're still us. So I think it's like appreciating all the things that we already have and then allowing ourselves to stretch, as opposed to being like, this is doom and gloom here. And when I get over there, everything's going to be amazing, because, you know, that saying, wherever you go, there you are. And I think that's what stops so many of us from taking action, because we think that life will be so much different over there, when really it's like life's 50-50. There's going to be good times and there's going to be more struggling times, and it's finding the balance and honoring your season rather than putting everything off until one day when everything's magically taken care of.
So beautifully said. I feel like we could talk forever. And I want to leave time for individuals to hear about how they can keep in touch with you, offerings that you have coming up, if anybody wants to keep in contact with you.
Awesome. So my website, suzannekolberg.com, I'm sure you'll put it in the show notes because it's an interesting spelling of Kolberg. And if you head over there, it's by the time this episode lands, it might be done. It's currently being redone. So it's a coming soon page, but it has about my program, which is Why Wait. It enrolls 4 times a year. It has my newsletter. So whether or not you're interested in working together further, I encourage you to jump on my newsletter. I love that I call it a newsletter. So many people are like, Suzanne, nobody wants to join a newsletter. My newsletter rocks. It's one of the emails that you'll actually open. It's unique stuff that I don't put anywhere else. And there's also a link to my book. So if you want to read about a weight journey like no other, my book's actually called The Beginning Is Shit, an unapologetic weight loss memoir. And, you know, whether you continue to follow me or not, I really encourage you, after you've listened to this episode, what is one takeaway? The takeaway that's going to take you closer to your goal, and, you know, write that down, because it can be easy to consume and listen to all these podcasts and go, why is nothing changing? I'm listening, I'm reading, I'm following these people, but like, what are you actually going to do differently? What action do you want to take, you know, based on this? And that penny can compound over time.
I love it. Thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom today. I'm so glad we got to have this conversation. And yes, I will put all of the links in the show notes. And if any of you have any questions, as always, I will put our contact information in the show notes as well. I would love to hear also your takeaways from today's chat. So feel free to email me anytime. And I look forward to connecting with you all again really soon.